Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back. This week on the show, I had my buddy Corey Wacker come on. Corey is a financial advisor for Edward Jones and just a wealth of knowledge. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. I learned a ton. He comes on and he talks about the importance of money management, saving for your retirement, which is something we're all going to have to do at some point. I do notice that there's a lot of financial advice and little clips coming out on certain platforms like TikTok, so it only made sense to have a bona fide professional come on the show and talk about these things. Corey makes it really easily digestible. I know that there's some intimidation factor and, you know, thinking about these long-term things can be kind of daunting, but I do think Corey really gives you the confidence to kind of take the reins on really what's going to be your future. That's all I got. I'll keep this one short. I hope you guys have all been doing well, and I hope you have a fantastic day. And without further ado, here's Corey.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. What's going on? I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. And it was awesome because we were both at a birthday party last night for a good friend, and you were there, and it was awesome.
It was great, man, and just seeing those old faces and connecting from friends that I haven't spoke with in a while, it was great.
Yeah,
was
and we've great. Known each other for a while, like since high school, right?
Yeah, oh
so
yeah.
It's
yeah.
been graduation 99. We don't need to date ourselves.
My man, we're getting old, huh?
But I want to have you on this show, or wanted to have you on this show, because you're an expert in your field. Why don't you explain for everybody what it is you exactly do? I mean, just at a very high level, 30,000 foot.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. So I graduated with a couple of degrees from Walsh College and immediately got into the financial industry. I was at a place where I was sort of learning the background of finances for 11 years and made a change over to a full-fledged financial advisor. Financial advisor with Edward Jones, a very large company. We're actually the largest privately owned company in the world today, which is pretty cool. I've had my practice rolling for 8 years now. And a financial advisor is kind of like it sounds. We put together a holistic, full financial advisor approach for our clients. So yes, we do the investments, we talk stocks, we talk bonds, but we also put together full plans for whatever's most important for our clients. Most of the time, that's retirement. It can be saving for college education. It can just simply be planning for a rainy day.
Sure. So this isn't where you started, though. I mean, you started with, you know, you've always had that entrepreneurial mindset.
Right.
I know that you're a hardworking dude. You've owned your own businesses. You were in the Quicken world for a little bit. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So Quicken Loans got my start. So right out of college, I happened to be the president of the student government body for Walsh College. Shout out. And I had a head department guy say, you're going to go work for Quicken Loans. And I said, I don't even know what a Quicken Loan is, right? So I interviewed there, and I was there for 11 years. I rose to the rank of what's called a president club banker. I was actually number three in the company for several years.
That's
in production.
Incredible. That's incredible.
And boy, I own a lot of my work ethic and just my discipline from Quicken Loans.
So obviously I want to talk to you about Edward Jones. I want to talk to you about the fundamentals of why it's important to have a plan for the future. What are some of your options? And I'm hoping you can educate us on all of this.
So let me break it down to you guys, okay? Most people are going to enter the workforce around age 22, 23, 24. And the average age of retirement right now is right around 65. So if you enter the workforce at 24 and you retire at 65, that's 31 years of your life, your lifespan, that we're working, we're earning, right? We're working, we're bringing in a paycheck. Now,
do you consider that time frame your prime earning years?
Those are your prime earning years, right?
Right.
And so to break it down further, the average age life expectancy right now is 78.5 years. However, here's a crazy stat. If you make it to age 65, the average age life expectancy goes up to 86 years old. So think about that. If you make it to 65,
that's crazy.
You're going to live likely to 86 years old.
How do you know that?
Okay. So right. So this is what I do. So let me paint a picture for you. If you retire at 65, which is the average, and you live to 86, That's 21 years of your life that you don't have a paycheck coming in.
Yeah.
So you're working 31 years. We think of our lifetime work, 31 years long, as like, wow, that's a long time to work. But literally, you're going to have 20 plus years, hopefully, in a healthy life that you don't have a paycheck coming in.
What a terrifying thought.
Bingo.
And Social Security is not going to cover that.
So Social Security. So I brought some stats here. And a lot of people, some people may know this, but it's good to understand. So cost of living. So Social Security, they have a cost of living increase that the past 7 or 8 years our retirees haven't really seen. But if the projections hold true, let me give you some facts here. In 2021, the average Social Security that people are receiving is $2,410 a month. Okay. Now in 2030, that average month that they're going to receive is $3,350 a month. And in 2040, if this stat holds true, they're going to receive $5,104 a month. But of course, we know inflation is going to take place and jump up. We're seeing that now. Go to the grocery store, put gas in your car, whatever. Lumber, inflation's whatever, here.
Everything.
Yeah. Buy a new car. It's crazy. You're paying $8,000 more.
Which that rate of inflation is about 4%, right?
Yeah. I mean, so 3% is sort of what we use as an average. And the last 8 or 9 years have really kind of tamed that. But you could see certainly a higher jump. And so the point is, if you think about, hey, I'm going to retire in the 2030 range, and I'm going to have on average $3,350 a month in Social Security, think about where your life is now and your earning track. If you're bringing in $3,000 a month now, or if you're bringing in $12,000 a month now, or maybe you have a joint income that you're bringing $15,000 or $20,000 a month in, only $3,000 roughly dollars a month, you're going to have to rely on Social Security. So where do you bridge that gap of income to actually enjoy your golden years?
Right. And think about medical expenses as well. And, I mean, that can cripple people.
And that's the fastest rising cause. That and education expenses, they're out of control. Right. So those costs continue to go up substantially.
And you want to live your life. You want to take a vacation maybe once a year, you know. And,
I want my clients to vacation 4 or 5 times a year. These are the things that we start to lay out in that. I call it sort of a blueprint. We build a blueprint to make sure they have everything that they want in retirement.
Yeah, sure. And I know personally that you're great. You manage my money and you're fantastic at what you do.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you. So let's talk about inflation and why it's important to invest your money in these financial vehicles. So can you go into that in terms of what are some of your options? But, you know, we were talking about age here for a second. We were talking about those prime earning years starting at 24. So somebody could technically start saving their money. They can come up with that plan with you right at 24.
Absolutely, right?
Maybe even before, right?
I mean, so when's the best time to plant a tree? Yesterday. When's the next best time? Today.
Right.
Do not put this off. Here's a crazy old stat in our industry. Most Americans, unfortunately, they spend more time each year planning their summer vacation than they do their retirement.
God, that's scary.
It's crazy scary, right? And so having a professional in your life that'll hold your hand through that. So you asked a few questions there. I want to sort of unpack them, and if we cover the questions that you've asked, great, and if you have follow-up, that's fine. But I'm gonna drop some money knowledge on you, right? So we talk about my favorite word in the industry is compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone's heard that word through middle school education or anywhere on up. But let me give you an example of that, okay? Let me show you why it's so important to start saving now as opposed to putting it off 3 years and kicking the can down the road. So let's say that you write me a check today for $100,000, no skin off your back.
Right.
And let's say that you're getting 7% on average per year with your money. Certainly not a guarantee. Some people may do much higher. Some people may do much lower depending on your risk level. But let me drop this on you. So $100,000 at 7% on average per year, compounding that interest in 5 years, that $100,000 is $140,000.
Right.
10 years. that $100,000 is now worth $196,000. 20 years, $386,000.
You got me so fired up right
for
now.
For $100,000 investment.
I'm writing you the check.
Right. And I'm going to break this down for you as well, right? And I know sometimes you're rolling in your car, you're listening to this, so it's sort of hard to understand, but I'll break it down very slowly. The average interest rate that you can find in a bank right now is 0.4%. Let me just drop this down. You write me a check for $100,000 and I put it in a savings account today at 0.4%. That $100,000 in 10 years is worth $104,072. That's a difference of the same compounding time at 7% of $91,928. And if you even look at the 20-year term, the difference is $278,000+. And my question that I have for my clients, my potential clients, and even you, and I know your listeners, they work hard for their money.
Yep.
You work hard for your money. You're grinding.
Yeah.
I'm grinding.
I work real fucking hard.
Right. You're grinding for your money, right? And so when I speak to individuals and they got, you know, hey, I'm rocking it. I got $100,000 in the savings, man. That money is lazy, Ken.
Yeah. Why the difference, though, Corey? Tell me why the difference between 0.4% and 7%.
Well, great question, right? So your investments, investing in a well-balanced portfolio with adequate risk, with well-diversification, on average, you're going to return somewhere between 5 and probably 9%, depending on your risk factor in that portfolio.
Right.
Right. And that's through the up years. That's through the down years. That's through sort of everything in between. That's likely what you're going to average on a market cycle.
So you touched on a couple things that I want to ask about, and you talked about aggressiveness, right? Can you kind of adjust that dial in terms of how aggressive you want to be? How conservative do you want to be? That's where you come into play, really, right?
Yeah, it is. And so any good financial advisor out there is going to have a risk analysis questionnaire that you're going to fill out. Mm-hmm. We are a fiduciary. I think most financial advisors, or maybe I would say a majority of financial advisors, are now a fiduciary.
What does that word mean?
Yep.
I want to dumb it down.
Yep. Great question. Great question. So a fiduciary is very simply this. We take an oath to put our clients' best interest first and foremost. Right. Back when advisories in the 80s and 90s, and I want to be careful here, there was some bad apples that would do some bad things to earn commissions and line the pocket of the financial advisor. If you take an oath of being a fiduciary, if that's how your company structures or works under, you cannot put your interest ahead of your clients. Right. And there's something else that goes with that is, and look, to your listeners out there that are ever sort of contemplating financial advisors or maybe interviewing a few, you want a fiduciary as a financial advisor. And another tagline that goes with that is know your customer. Right.
Right.
And so that's where the questions, the interview, really understanding your client's needs and wishes come into play. And then that gets back to your risk question.
So not everybody's a fiduciary, though.
No, absolutely not. Nope, they're not.
Scary.
Scary, right? They are sort of operating under the old assumption of, you know, we're not a fiduciary, but trust me, I'm gonna do what's best for you.
Okay. So you really have to have a mastery of the market. You have to understand not only your customers, but as people, but also their goals, you know, what their retirement age is, you know, all these multifactorial things to determine really what is that level of, how do I put it? Again, like how aggressive do you want to be? How conservative do you want to be? How do you dial that up and down?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, right? And so here, I'll share with you a story that, and this has happened probably several times, is I have a, you know, let's say it's a retired couple and they have a very good nest egg built and set aside, but the maybe the gentleman or the gal says to me, hey, you know, I want to be more risky. I want to bump up the risk to elevate my returns, right? However, after I understand their full situation and after we review what their goals are in retirement, I may tell them, hey, your retirement and everything that you want with your estate after you're gone works at 5% average return a year. Every bit of goal that you've stated to me works at that rate of return. We don't have to take on this risk. So even though that you, the client, may say, yeah, I'm risky, let's go, let's get at it, I may try to dial that back with you. And of course, that's going to be a conversation we're going to have.
Right.
But that's where a real solid financial advisor, there's no need to take on the risk if we can meet all your goals.
Sure. And you don't want to be completely contrary to what they want to do and what their goals are. But I like the fact that, I mean, look, I mean, you're a financial advisor, right? Mm-hmm. You are an advisor at a very personal level. You know,
right.
You're handling people's money. You know, that's a big deal. That's a huge responsibility.
Yeah, and we don't take that, or I'll speak for myself, I don't take that responsibility lightly. Oftentimes, I'm asking an individual after several appointments and making sure that individual is a good fit for my practice, because that's important, and make sure that that individual thinks I'm a good fit for their life. I'm asking them to hand over their life savings.
Yeah, that's
we talked
fair.
About that 30 years of work. They've worked 25, 30 years for this money, and I'm saying, trust me with it.
Well, let's take that at an emotional level. What is that stress level like? Are you at a 10 all the time? Because you got to get those calls like, hey, I'm losing money, and it, just mm-hmm. as a function of the market, mm-hmm. not for anything
yeah,
that you're doing, but that's the nature of the market.
So the stress level's not at a 10. And I would say that it's more around, maybe an average 6 or a 7. And here's why, right? Any good professional, a surgeon, a dentist, if they do their job correctly and lay out all of the expectations up front, there's very rarely surprises on the backside, right? And this is what separates a really good professional, surgeon, dentist, financial advisor from sort of the average. The average is picking up the phone and trying to put out fires. And the professionals, we sort of say, hey, this could burn at one point or time. We may have something over here, but it's normal. It's natural. And we have a plan in place to overcome that, right? So if we do that job up front and the clients understand it, and sometimes I even tell the clients, okay, now repeat it back to me, teach it to me. If they have that depth of understanding, we have a plan for it.
You're
We've already modeled it.
Setting the expectation. You
Big
modeled
time.
It. You know what the trends are.
Right.
You know what it is historically.
Right.
And what's the reception on that from your customers?
So at first, they pause and sort of, oh, I didn't think about that. You know, I tell my clients this, 3 years up, 1 year down.
Yeah.
3 years up, 1 year down. And so this is sort of over the history of the market, right? Down markets are short, and up markets last a lot longer than down markets, right? And I tell them that. I said, hey, you know, go to bed with write it on a napkin and put it on your pillow. 3 years up, 1 year down. If you're comfortable with that, you're likely a good fit, at least financially, in my office.
How do you feel about the market now?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Personally speaking, the economy is really roaring right now, right? And you can't buy a car, you can't buy a microchip, you can't get your windows done, try to fix a deck, right? Everyone is out in demand. People right now have more savings, checking savings, investments, than they've ever had in the history of ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
And they have, in total, less debt than they've ever had in a very long time. And they have as much equity in their real estate as they've had in a very long time. Those are all pointing towards success. So for the short term, 2022 quarter, first half of 2022, we think things will be pretty outstanding.
Do you think it's sustainable, though?
You know, market cycles happen, right? And that's inevitable. And so, yeah, you'll see some down days, and you'll see some down days. And in fact, Can I go over some numbers here with you?
Yeah, please. I want to make a quick comment, though. My biggest concern is that there's $6 trillion that have been injected into the economy. That is an insane amount of money, an unfathomable number, right? And so what is that percentage of inflation going to look like once the dust settles?
It's a complex question. And oftentimes with questions like that, we look back to the past, okay? So I want to rewind, I should say, to around Thanksgiving of 2008 and beyond, and when we went through a financial meltdown. Banks failed, right?
Right.
You heard the word TARP,
mm-hmm.
the rescue package. $960 billion.
It got that high?
I thought it was only
$700.
Nope, $960 billion worth of rescue money injected directly into our economy. Buybacks of mortgage-backed securities.
Dude, that didn't go into the economy. That went right back to the banks.
That's the name of the game. Oh, amen, bailout. Right? I mean, the bailout, right? The Wall Street versus Main Street. But here's my thought on that is every financial guru, economic major at that time said that TARP package would send this economy into a tizzy. There would be inflation through the roof.
I remember that.
Right? And every single one of those really smart people with like PhDs after their name and like big university graduations were wrong. They were dead wrong, right? And I was in that camp too. And my young financial advisor said, we can't just print almost $1 trillion. Right now, those really smart people have learned from that time when they were wrong. And most of them, I was just reading an article, most of them raises their hand now and said, we should have went more. We could have went $2 trillion, $4 trillion. Because the economy recovery was 10 years. It was a sluggish march upward over that 10-year period. And they think if we would have went $2 or $3 trillion, we could have recovered the economy in 2 years. And now that they believe, there wouldn't have been any inflation. Fast forward to today. Some of those same really smart people that went through the 2009 thing are in office and making recommendations to our politicians. And they said, well, we learned from the 2009. We can go big. We can do another one. We can go big, and inflation won't happen.
They also learned to get rid of Ben Bernanke with the Federal Reserve.
And so here's the crazy thing, and here's the point of my thing is, they were wrong then, and now they're like, oh, it didn't happen back then. It won't happen now. Mm. I hope to goodness they're not wrong this time.
That's scary.
It is scary.
Really, really
scary. And we're seeing it right now. Is it transitory? Fancy word for, does prices come back down to normal in 3 or 4 months? Some people are in that camp. Others aren't. I'm sort of in the camp of, look, they raised the price of my Caesar salad. I don't see them just coming back down for that. You know, we're going to lower it $1 because things have flattened out. Hard to go down sometimes on those prices.
Gas creeps me out, but that's multifactorial as well.
Tough, man.
So tell me what you got. Show me your pamphlet.
Yeah, well, no, and I want to break this down. And again, some numbers may be tough if you're not looking at them. But to your point of sort of the market scares me. Right. And hey, we're at a top. We set 6 all-time highs in the last 2 weeks. It's a good time to get in, right? Well, maybe not. Maybe it is. I want to share this with you, and I want to make sure that your listeners understand and sort of break this down. So $10,000 in the S&P 500 in the last 20 years. And Ken, we could talk for days about everything that's happened in the last 20 years, including a surprise. Donald Trump was a surprise, the insurrection on the Capitol. How about a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic? The list goes on and on. Our Capitol building shut down for 28 days. We thought that was going to be the end of the world when the government shut down. That's a blip. How about Brexit? Yeah, crazy, right? A lot of things have happened in the last 20 years. Let me give you something here, and I want to make sure that you and your listeners understand this. If you missed the 30 single best days in the market in the last 20 years, best days are, hey, the Dow's up 620 points. That's a best day. If you missed 30 of those days in the last 20 years because maybe we're market timing, we're getting in, we're getting out, we're reacting to Brexit or anything else, or we're going to be smarter than the next guy and we're going to get in next week, but not now. If you miss the 30 best days, your $10,000 over 20 years is worth $9,026 by simply missing the 30 best days in the last 20 years.
You scare the crap out of me.
30 days! Let me continue on here. If you missed the 10 best days, just the 10, you caught the other 20 that you pulled it out in before, your $10,000 is now worth $21,926. Okay, you doubled your money. 20 years. If you stayed fully invested and put a blindfold over your eyes and cotton in your ears, that $10,000 is worth $43,934 by putting a blindfold over your eyes.
That's pretty specific.
That's pretty specific. And the difference between missing the 30 best days and your hard-earned money is $32,000. Add another zero to that.
So this ties into that quote Warren Buffett gave. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
He's given many a quote, so I don't want to assume I know which
just
one.
Just the one that it basically, the market rewards patience.
Big time, man. I mean, and that man is the pillar of patience and understanding what he invests in. And so I look at that. That's a good quote. We'll put a pin in that if we can come back to it. But just going back to this fact of, I can't invest now, we're high. Or, well, what about the midterm elections? Or whatever we may worry about, gas prices going to $4 a gallon, got to get out. I would ask anyone this, when's the next best day in the market? I would ask you, looking at you, when's the next best day in the market? And you would say,
yesterday.
Or I have no clue.
Yeah.
When's the next best day? If your listeners just take anything from this, is you got to trust it. You got to trust it because we never know when the next best day is, but don't miss them.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, it's like if you look for a reason not to do it, you're going to see them everywhere.
Oh, all the naysayers, man. That, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, right? We can get into that, right? That's what put eyeballs on the screen. Man, they've been calling the end of this bull market for 10 years now. And at some point, someone's going to be right, and they're going to raise their hand and be a hero. But
do you ever watch the news channels with economic advice, or you just turn that crap off? You're just like,
yeah. So
where do you get your info?
Yeah, I mean, all kind of publications. I'm listening to earnings calls in the morning. You know, I'm reading stuff and researching stuff at midnight or plus. But those channels offer some good things, and what it does is it keeps you current, right? Because they're reporting on current events, and so it keeps you current.
Right. What does Larry Kudlow think?
Good boy, Larry. I'll leave Larry's thoughts for his podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Awesome, man. So let's talk about some of these financial vehicles that somebody can do. They come in and there's things that maybe they heard of in passing, hearing maybe their dad talk about, their friends talk about, things like 401k, IRA, Roth IRA, even just stocks.
Yeah, sure. So I'll sort of break it down. A lot of people don't sort of understand this because a lot of people have a 401k option, which is a great option. A 403b is oftentimes through teachers and nurses, same category. So retirement savings, if you can picture IRA as your huge umbrella, and then all of these different acronyms fall under that umbrella, right? So you have an IRA, that's a retirement savings vehicle. Most retirement IRAs are post-tax. And so what that means is, right, so you are not paying taxes on the 401k that goes into your 401k right now, but I want to touch on that in a moment. However, let's say you're fortunate enough, you have $1 million in your 401k and you're ready to retire. A lot of people don't take this into consideration. When you take a distribution, when you're looking, you raise your hand and say, I'd like income for the year from that 401k, it's 100% taxed at your ordinary income rate. And oh, by the way, you take 60 grand out of that, that gets added to your income and oftentimes can push you up into a higher tax bracket. right? So a lot of times they say, well, I've done it. I've saved $1 million in my IRA. And sometimes we've got to walk them off the ledge and say, yeah, but the value of that is $700, $725, $750, depending on your taxes. How do we combat that, right? So we're getting into a little bit. A Roth IRA is something that you can add, and you're adding money in that's taxed now. So like if you look at your wallet, any dollar that's in your wallet has been taxed by the federal government, unless you're doing some shady stuff. It's been taxed, right? And so then you put that into a Roth IRA. And the benefit of a Roth IRA is you have $1 million in your Roth IRA when you're ready to retire. The value is $1 million. When you pull money out of a Roth IRA after it's sat for at least 5 years, that money is virtually tax-free.
Right.
Right. So a lot of plans at work, I encourage all your listeners to check into this and then check with a professional. A lot of your plans at work have a 401k and a Roth 401k. Pay a little bit of tax now. It's a huge benefit later. And oh, by the way, we talked about the debt. Good chances taxes are going to be higher 10, 15, 20 years from now than lower,
right?
Because at some
point, that lower tax,
we
got to
pay
it.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And so there's some advanced planning and strategies in that. I won't get into now, but there's some advanced plannings of a Roth conversion that's so incredible, enticing. And so, you know, there's some options for that.
So let's make the distinction between Roth IRA and Roth 401k, because essentially to me it means the same thing, because it's pre-tax, except your contribution amount, your limit for the 401k is a lot higher.
Yeah, great question. So you hit the nail right on the head. They are the same thing. Roth IRA and a Roth 401k are the same sort of, it's just written into the tax code of what it is. That's where the IRA or the 401 stands for. It's just in the tax code. So a Roth is in there. So traditionally speaking, if you do a Roth IRA just on your own, the contribution limit to that in 2021 is $6,000. And if you're 50 years or older, there's a catch-up, so you can put an extra $1,000 in there for a total of $7,000. In your 401k, the beautiful thing about that is the contribution for that is $18,500. And you can also put all of that money into a Roth 401k. So you can't do both, but you can add $18,500 into a Roth 401k, so a much higher contribution if it's through an employer plan.
So that you would think that you would want to go with the Roth 401k, so because you can contribute more, right?
Okay, so for most people, that's a blanket statement. The real high earners that are in the 30-plus percent tax bracket, maybe that 401k provides a little shelter on that money, right? So, you know, seek out a professional or do some research on Google to see what's right for you. But for the most part, that's correct.
Or come see you.
Or come see me. It's not about me. It's about getting those people with a plan, right? We spoke that in the beginning.
So what about stocks? We haven't really touched on stocks much. And, you know, it seems very sexy. You know, I hear people talking about it, you know, in my work. They're showing me, you know, their phones mm-hmm. with, oh, yeah, my stock went up this much. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, sure. The water cooler spike. So I'll throw this out there for my clients that'll hear this and possibly a few potential clients. I am not a trend chaser, personally. I've never bought AMC or I've never bought any of these other things. My clients in my possession have never bought Bitcoin and all of those things. So when I think of a stock, right, and just the basic definition of a stock is you own a fraction of the company that you're deciding to buy, right? I want the very best in breed when I put my clients' money or my personal money into a stock. Procter & Gamble, Walt Disney, Coca-Cola, kind of boring. You want that 7% a year? These are the companies that have stood the test of time. They pay a dividend, most of them. And so that's my majority of the stock ownership for my clients.
How do you assess risk for each one of those companies?
Yeah, great question. So we look a lot at track record and history, right? At a full-fledged financial advisor firm, like so many out there, including Edward Jones, and this is opposed to some of the apps that you guys may use and pick up. We have an investment committee advisor group at Edward Jones, really smart people that are doing this research for us continuously, and then they provide us with the investments that they feel most comfortable for us to recommend to our clients. So, and that's part of being a fiduciary as well, right? Prove it. Why did you recommend buying Microsoft over Apple? What are your thoughts? Well, as a fiduciary, I better have a plan. If you're not a fiduciary, you can just say, well, you know, Microsoft's good.
Yeah.
You know, so that goes back to that rule as well.
So what else you got for us, Corey, before we slip into our last few questions here? Is there any pearls of wisdom and advice you'd like to share with my listeners?
You know, we touched on Social Security, and some people know this, but this is a pitfall that a lot of people don't understand is you can take Social Security, depending on your birth date, at 60, 61, 62. A lot of people don't understand this. If you take Social Security early, you raise your hand and you say, I want my money. There's an income limitation that you can earn, and that happens to be this year. It's a very low limitation, $18,960 of earned income through a W-2, 1099, whatever. And if you earn over that amount, you pay $1 back to Social Security for every $2 that you earn over that amount.
Wow.
Right? So this is huge, right? Talk about planning. Talk about the advisor that you choose to really earn their salt. If you wait till age 65, you have unlimited earning potential. And Social Security, the amount that you're going to receive increases every year by 8% a year the longer you wait. Right? And so we talked about a 7% return, and that 8% is guaranteed. These are the type of talks that you want to have with your professional. When is the right time to look at Social Security? If you're planning on working in retirement or after retirement, like so many Americans do, don't turn it on early if you're planning on earning.
So is there talk of that retirement age increasing to 66, 67?
Yes, and it has been. And this is one of the plans from our wonderful government to make sure Social Security is around well into the future is by delaying the benefit eligibility age so they're paying out less. Now, everyone says, well, will it be around in the future? Some shape or form, in my opinion, absolutely it will. We couldn't have a nation and couldn't function without it. But you have to understand it goes back to sort of those mortuary tables. People are living longer. So they're receiving Social Security for much longer than they were.
So, Corey, you said the word mortuary, and I want to slide into something completely off topic. Everything you said was super informative.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for explaining all that.
It's
very educational for everybody.
You're welcome.
But you said the word mortuary, and I saw you last night, as I said in the beginning of this, and we had a very sobering conversation about a life event that just happened to you. How long ago? About 5 months?
Yeah, well, no. May 1st.
That was in May.
May 1st. Yeah, May Day. Wow. Saturday, first Saturday of May.
Do you mind sharing the story?
You know, I can share sort of the rough edges with it, but I think that one of our friends last night that is a nurse said it best. I was the one in the billion person that had a very negative reaction to one of the shots. And that negative reaction caused me to not only lose consciousness, but they believe that my heart stopped for close to 4 minutes. And CPR was administered. I was very fortunate that was a doctor in line filling a prescription.
Holy crap.
Yep. And you know, so that certainly can jar you. And I haven't felt really good until probably 2 to 3 weeks ago. So, yeah, you know, in without getting too spiritual, when I was sort of lying there, well, I'll put it to you this way. I woke up in the fire chief's arms. He had my head propped up, and the doctor was performing CPR on my chest. And the first words I said, strangely enough, to the fire chief was, "I've never been more peaceful in my life." And this veteran fire chief, beautiful mustache, I could see his face going white when I said that. And that's the first words. "I've never felt more peaceful in my life." So, you know, we all have those experiences, but that is mine.
Not all of us have those experiences, man.
That's
super intense.
Yeah, it was. You know, picked up, off to the ER I went, and watched the Kentucky Derby from my hospital bed that night.
I hope you didn't drink a mint julep.
No, there was no mint juleps.
Oh, my God, Corey. You're a miracle, man.
Yeah, thank you, man.
I mean, spiritually and just religiously, I mean, did it have that deep impact on you?
Yeah, you know, my life is spinning fast like everyone's out there. I've definitely taken some more time to be in the moment, to reflect. And, you know, I kind of live my life, it's a very simple meaning, but just try to do the right thing. Try to always just do the right thing. And certainly I have my fails, but it's taken on a little more meaning. Just be nice to people, right?
Yes.
Pretty easy.
Yes.
Just pretty easy. Just be nice. Be courteous to people. You know,
it can make someone's day.
You can, right? And it spreads like wildfire, right? I mean, it makes your community stronger. It makes just the people you're around smarter. And it probably somewhere in your soul affects you, makes you a better person.
Yep. Corey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story.
You're very welcome.
I know it's deeply personal, and I'm fucking glad you're here, man.
Hey, man.
Excuse my F-bombs.
Hey, I'm here with you, my man.
Professional presentation. Let's slide into my last two questions. So one's about Detroit, one's about music. We're all part of this greater whole, this greater fabric that is Detroit. You and I have grown up in this area. We've both spent time down there, have great memories. So I would like to know from you, what does this geography and this idea of Detroit have for you?
Well, it's a good question. Of course, I've listened to your podcast, so I had some time to reflect on it. And you know what it is take this a little bit maybe off script. It's the number 20. What does that mean? You know what living in Detroit symbolizes in this area and maybe the Midwest culture is the number 20. Possibly the greatest running back of all time, little B. Sanders love,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And my man accomplished so much. Rushing leader, 2,000 yards, could have been easily the all-time rusher, but he left the game early. But living in Detroit, living in this area, there is a humbleness about Michigan. There is a lunch pail, put your hard hat on, work hard in this area. And after every time that he scored, after every time he ran 68 yards and danced around the whole Green Bay Packers squad, he just handed the ball to the referee, man.
Right. I was going to say he didn't dance around. He just handed
the
ball.
Oh, he danced around the players, but he did not dance, right?
Exactly.
Like Jerry Maguire, sometimes you got to dance. He did not dance, right? And the humbleness that he showed and shared and the class that he did things on the football field, that's Detroit. That's us, right?
I love that
right?
analogy.
And,
yes.
And I keep, you know, I'm getting better as I grow and mature as a man. I'm getting better understanding and respecting that humbleness.
Awesome. Completely unique answer.
There you go.
This is dynamite.
Thank you.
I agree. You know that dude's special when people today are still wearing his jersey.
Come on, man. Barry Sanders. Let's go.
When I get him on the show, I'll have you come in.
I love that, brother. And he'll do it maybe, you know?
All right, so let's talk about music. You know, interestingly enough, as I've done these interviews, I find that there's people out there that it's just not important to them, which blows my mind because it's something so integral to me. I'm going to jump in my car after this interview and I'm going to throw on some music. So what is yours, if any? What are some of your favorites, throwbacks? Give it to me.
So I fall into that first space that you just mentioned. I'm not a huge music guy. I love good music. What's good music? I don't know. I'll tell you when I hear it.
Right.
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 However, so when I'm rolling in my car, when I'm driving up north.
You listen to my podcast.
I listen to educational things.
I like
enlightening the mind, right? I'm a rolling library when I'm listening, right? I took my kids up north to Burt Lake over the 4th of July weekend. And
you got
a
place up there?
Family, yep. Beautiful out there, man. Family's got a place up there, so yeah, it's my place.
Love it.
They don't know that yet. And you know what I had on? So I had on the SPA radio station on Sirius, right? I believe in music as a calming factor. I believe in music can set the mood for anything. Get hype. Let's go. What is that? Let's get down to business. that's a buddy's song that we played over in Vegas, right? But I believe in music sets the mood, but I couldn't name the title of 10 songs. I couldn't name 15 band members, but I listen to it and I know what I like when I like it.
That's cool, man. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to podcasts. I love learning. And I find actually that my long drives go a lot faster when I'm listening to like a Joe Rogan, you know, 3-hour episode, right? I always try to learn something every day, every week, every year. As I'm going, you know, older and older. But yeah, I like listening to podcasts and cars. I do listen to music. I mean, a ton. But, you know, my music is shifting more and more towards like ambient.
Okay.
You know, like music without lyrics. You know, some of it can get a little electronic, you know. But
the station that's plugged into my car is Chill. You ever listen to Chill?
I haven't.
Sirius?
I don't have Sirius.
Oh, man. Jump in there. Especially if you're driving
around,
right? I don't like
to pay the membership. No, actually, I say I don't like to pay the membership.
Break
it
down.
But I pay the Spotify.
But so you mentioned music without lyrics. That is 60% of the music when I'm listening to.
Yeah.
Just feeling it, man.
I love it.
Just getting going.
All right, buddy. Sure. So let's end it at that. Do you have any parting words? Obviously, we want to tell everybody where we can find you. Number, address.
Yeah, you know, and so my last name is Wacker. Find it that way. Corey Wacker, right?
Perfect.
Google that. Wacker. I'm in Northville. I'm on 7 Mile. I'm right next to a long-term restaurant called Rocky's. I actually watched out of my window the mental hospital being demolished a year and a half ago.
So if geographically,
if you know where that is, that's where my office is. You know, phone number, address, it's all there. You can find it if you're interested in my expertise. And keep in mind, too, right, a little shout-out to Edward Jones. We have 19,800 advisors across this United States. I believe that is the largest network or group under one company title. So, look, I'd love to chat with you, but we have a lot of very good professionals that have been doing this a long time. So regionally or geographically, if Northville's not for you, look one up. Give them a call, man. And I'll throw this out there, too. There's no cost to sit down. We don't charge for planning. A lot of other companies will throw a $600 fee on that to sort of start that blueprint. That's not us. Good company, conservative company, Midwest values. 10 second digress is Edward Jones was started. Edward Jones Sr. was a farmer in Missouri, and his son said, "Dad, why do we have to go 3 hours into the big city to find some representation for us? Us farmers have money." Long story short, he said, "What do we do about it, Dad?" So we'll go get your securities license. So it took him a little bit to get it. And he came back to his dad and he said, "Dad, now what?" You know what his dad said? "Son, drive up to the next farm." And so that is our core value and belief. We are in every small community. We're in some of the large communities. Just seek out an Edward Jones guy. They're good people. They're community involved. You know, they care.
Corey, thank you so much. Fist bump, brother.
Hey, man.
I appreciate the hell out of you.
I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me in here. It's an awesome setup, and I look forward to continuing to watch you grow and your success.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
All right.